What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and joining me, who is this guy? Oh my gosh, it's Eno Saris. Hi, Eno. Good to see you.
No way. Couldn't be.
What's going on, man?
How you doing?
I'm good. We have these wonderful new apps for PL Pro members looking at minor league pitchers, and we have pitch set cards for them for PL Pro members. It's great. I'm having a ton of fun with it. And of course, our live data every day. So we actually, before the show, we're just kind of jumping through for some of the guys.
I was jumping on one of your pitcher list live. I don't know. What
is it? It's the pitcher list live one. Today's four seamers.
Yes. I was jumping on that yesterday to check out Thorpe's four seamer as I was watching it.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to decide. It's really hard to eye scout fastballs, I think. It's just.
Yeah, because I mean, like, yeah, we'll talk about it, I'm sure, later, Hurst and Waldrop, but like looking at it, it was like, oh, cool. That look zoom. It looks kind of nice. And it's not actually, but
like, what's the difference between, like, it's really hard, I think, like, the difference between like a straight fastball and a straight fastball with pop, like with ride.
Yeah.
Because you kind of assume when you see a straight fastball, you're like, oh, yeah, zoom. You know?
Yeah, zoom, zoom.
But it's not a wee. It's not like a two seamer. Wee. Yeah, right. So,
it depends a lot on like where the camera is too. If it's above, it's just like, I don't know. If it's underneath, and you can actually sometimes see, like in Cincinnati is a good example, because they're kind of low there, and you can really see if that thing just stays there or not. I actually look back when I think of like the laser beam four seamer, I just think of Mark Pryor's. For me, that's forever known with the Wrigley camera angle back then. That was just the laser beam. But I don't know. I mean,
if you're lucky enough to ever sit behind home plate, or, you know, this is one of the reasons like minor leagues is so much fun. Go to a minor league game and sit behind home plate. Then I think you can start to see fastball shapes. And
so what I was really lucky to do is go to Citi Field to watch in Managa. And because the Mets are the Mets right now, this was May 1st or so. The seats were like $60 to be behind home plate. It was unbelievable. I've never done this before. I didn't know this. They have like their own in suite for those with really good seats, so they don't have to be with the plebs.
Yeah, they have their like own food and own toilets.
Yeah, everything is just there.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
in Yankee Stadium, it's even more pronounced. They have like a moat. They have like a moat separating the like the glasses.
It's unbelievable. I had no idea. I just wanted to think like you would see, I don't know, Carmelo Anthony just with everyone else waiting online at the generic concession stand.
No, you wouldn't.
Oh, man. All right. But so I actually did this specifically because it was a Managa. I wouldn't really normally do that, but I was like, oh, wait, maybe I could see that the vert on it. And you could. You absolutely could.
Yeah.
It was just like so just right there and just a little extra. Just whoa.
I stood up. I stood into the Traject machine. The Traject is the new pitching machine that not only can do ride, but it shows has a hologram of the pitcher pitching, so that when the ball comes out, it comes out of their hand.
Yeah.
And Verlander's fastball was like, what? That's gonna hit me in the chin. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're like,
yeah, right. The fuck?
Like, where did that? How is that here? It's not supposed to be here.
Oh, that's wild. I would love to try that. How do I try that?
Probably winter meetings.
Okay. All right.
They were demoing at the winter meetings.
Oh my gosh.
I nearly peed myself.
That's because of all of the beer. So I do want to talk about Drew Thorpe though. You were mentioning that you're watching him yesterday. Drew Thorpe, of course, made his MLB debut for the White Sox. We're recording this on Wednesday, and I have a whole thing about change at first, guys. If you're a prospect, change at first, and without anything that is exceptional in the rest of your arsenal, you are going to have good minor league numbers, because I think that a lot of double A guys, they're just trying to be like, I need to be able to hit a major league fastball. And then if you have a change up in there too, it's just, wait, I can't do both yet. But once you get to the majors, you kind of need to have more. It was a successful line. For Drew Thorpe, the changeup, I think was as advertised, but I wasn't that impressed with everything else. Was there anything that you really caught from that?
I had a few thoughts. I mean, first of all, I wanted to check if the fastball had good ride, and it had okay ride, but this is something we talk about a lot here, is that the ride was negated by his slot. Like it was basically prototypical average ride for his slot. Mm-hmm. Like he's kind of a three quarters over the top-ish guy. And so the ride was almost exactly what you'd expect. Right. And maybe not surprisingly for a changeup guy, he didn't have good extension, you know, like maybe he's just used to sort of, you know, pronating, cutting the ball off. Like maybe that's not a really good sort of cue to have for, extending far out there.
You got me thinking there. Is that a common thing? Low extension equals better changeup? Is that right? Or high extension doesn't relate to, I mean, I'm thinking Bailey Ober off the top of my head.
He has a good changeup. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Bailey Ober's best pitch, I think, is his changeup.
I'm not sure of that. I know that with cutters, it seems like you have better cutters if you don't have great extension. Hmm. Because cutters, you're like by nature kind of tight. Remember
we thought
about cutters versus splitters and stuff.
Right. Oh, that's fun. I gotta think about that a little bit more. Using that today's fastball app that we have, 16 to 17 inches of vert, which is great, but 0.5 attack angle, which is really steep. Low extension, 6.3, 91 mile per hour velocity. And we have this thing called the Fan 4 Plus, which is essentially saying, based on those four major metrics of whiffs that generate whiffs for four seamers, how is this stuff essentially suggesting that it's going to be a whiff or not? And 83. That's on the plus scale, which is pretty dang bad for Drew Thorpe's four seamer. As far as our location was 95.4,
which is like the 25th best fastball of the day.
Yeah, something like that.
It was not good.
It's at the bottom of the list when it comes to Fan 4.
So I was like, okay, you've got like, you know, 92. So you're not, the velo isn't good.
Right.
You're a right hander. It's not an exceptionally interesting arm slot or delivery. So the fastball, I was like trying to like go through and be like, what's this going to look like tomorrow on Stuff Plus?
Yeah.
Cause I'm a basic B. You know, I was kind of like, you know, previewing it in my head. And I thought, okay, this is like an 80 Stuff Plus fastball.
Right.
And sure enough, we came out with the numbers today, and we had actually 60 Stuff Plus fastball. Oof. So worse than I thought.
Oh my God.
And then, so, you know, Brooks Baseball gives him two breaking balls. Baseball Savant gives him three breaking balls. That was the other thing I was like trying to think about while I was watching it. And I was like, okay, there's like this 86-ish gyro slider again, their, you know, cutter on Savant. There's like a 82-ish mini sweeper, like kind of a just an 82-ish decent slider, like a bigger movement slider. And then there's like this like high 80s curveball. I'm not surprised at all that Brooks was like, I'm not sure there's three here, because between the like 83 mile an hour slider and the 79 mile an hour curveball, I was like, are we sure this is two distinct breaking balls? Like, is this really different?
We have more horizontal break on the curveball by about 5 inches, which is why that happened. But the movement on the cutter versus the slider, there's just more drop on that one. The slider versus the cutter, but they're like a 2 to 3. This is all from Savant, of course, that we're getting this.
Right.
So that's where I see it. I mean, like the spin rates on them, it's kind of hilarious. They're all like the same spin. The curve was 2,341, and the cutter, which is the high end here, is 2,387. So like,
yeah. So he cuts the spin efficiency on the cutter, so it's 30%. So that's the gyro. It's basically the gyro version of his other slider.
Yep.
36% spin efficiency on the slider. And then, then have the curveball and spin efficiency for some reason.
Huh. But I mean, I will say I did like the cutter when I saw it, of the three. That felt like the more consistent, like, cool, I need a strike here. This is the one I'm going to turn to.
That, and he was playing off of the off the fastball fairly interestingly, with
right.
Because the fastball has a little bit more side to side movement,
mm-hmm.
I believe.
It made me wonder a bit while watching this.
Not that much side to side movement.
I would think that Thorpe, I mean, we think of Thorpe kind of still in that Yankee fold, right? Of look, you have Michael King, you have Clark Schmidt, you have Will Warren, and here goes Drew Thorpe, changeup guy. That means you go sweeper, you go sinker.
Yeah, except he hasn't done the sinker. I wonder if a sinker would help him, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know, because you have a four seamer that does have good ride, right? It is a 16 to 17 inches of vert. Mm-hmm. And given how good the changeup is, I don't really think that his arm slot is a lower one like the other guys. It is still more.
Yeah, he's almost like a baby Clay Holmes, where he's like trying to be over the top and use seam shifted wake. This is definitely a seam shifted wake changeup.
Sure.
So if he's up here and he's getting, you know, 7 inches of horizontal movement from mm-hmm. that slot, I'm saying that seam shifted wake in my head.
Sure.
And
that makes a lot of sense.
And so then if he does do a slider, it cuts the effectiveness of the change, because then it looks too much like it. Mm-hmm. But maybe it doesn't, because this looks, it's like trying to be a power change in that it has 5 inches more horizontal. Okay, so cut to the chase. Stuff Plus did not like the changeup. And I kind of predicted that just because it wasn't a power change. It was 82. Mm-hmm. You know, it just wasn't going to get any credit for the velo. And then it did have good movement, but it didn't remind me of sort of like the Greinke Felix power change. So
yeah.
I was like, this should be a straight change. So maybe if he threw a sinker, it would work better, because then he's throwing a straight change and it looks even more like his sinker, you know, because if mm-hmm. he threw a sinker, I'm guessing it would be 92 with about like 6-7 inches of horizontal movement.
Right, right, right.
And his changeup is 82 with 7 inches of horizontal movement. So it could be pretty similar. Anyway, there was a quote on Twitter about somebody saying, if you polled coaches, they would say, this is what you want a changeup to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Like your fastball, but slower.
Right.
And that's what Drew Thorpe's changeup is. I'm willing to give him that beyond the Stuff Plus number and just say he throws it with the same arm speed. It's a seam shifted wake. It's a little bit surprising, I think, to people that has that much movement from that arm slot. And so I'm going to give him a good changeup. I'm going to give him a average slider at mm-hmm. best. I'm going to give him a below average cutter, and I'm going to give him a poor fastball. So the other question I had was like, do we care about comps enough to be like, who could this be like?
I actually have the best comp, and then you're going to hate it.
What is it?
He plays, let's see, he plays in the NL Central, was in the NL West last year. It's a hard one. He's made some starts this year for his team. He gets kind of rare ones. He was opened for yesterday by his team in the NL Central.
Wait.
He made like a few starts and became a holds guy for his team in the NL West last year.
Oh, but he was open for, so he's not going to show up on this list.
No, he's not.
Hold on. I'm going to get him.
You're going to get him? Are you sure? Guys listening, everyone's yelling at you right now. It's someone who I've said should be throwing his change up more and actually started to a little bit.
Man, I'm not going to get it. Who is it?
He's on the Reds.
Oh, Nick Martinez.
Yes, Nick Martinez.
Why isn't he showing up on this?
Because Brett Suter opened for him yesterday.
Yeah, why just put all the reliever? It needs to be pitched, not many.
No, 1.2.
Oh,
that's yesterday. I pulled up to 39 pitches for whatever reason.
Nick Martinez is not bad.
Because it is a good ride fastball, but it's not generally a good one. He has a cutter that he throws for strikes in there too, and the changeup I think is his far away best pitch.
The other question I had was like, is it possible to make your living on a, because I do think there are starting pitchers that have one elite pitch.
Yeah.
And kind of make everything work off that.
Sure.
And so I was like, is it possible to have the elite changeup and make everything work off of that?
Michael Wacha?
That's who's number one in changeup pitch type value.
Right.
Michael King is right there. We've already mentioned him. I don't think he's Michael Wacha, but that's someone he should watch.
Yeah.
That's actually possible. He could have a Wacha-ish career because Wacha, his cutter doesn't rate well, mm-hmm. but when he's going well, he uses it to offset the iffy fastball and the fact that he's never developed a really good breaking ball.
Right.
So actually, yeah, I'm going to give you a Wacha comp. He's definitely not Michael King for me.
No, definitely not. Michael King is a much better breaking ball.
Yeah.
And the sinker is a real powerhouse.
He's not Logan Webb for me.
Yeah, no, the sinker's way better.
Yeah. He's probably better than Tyler Anderson. I'm just going down the changeup.
Yeah, no, of course. Tyler Anderson's an interesting one because he actually does have a fastball that does get rise. And
there's some weird stuff here. Bybee, Canning, and Burns. Like, I don't.
Well, right. Bybee's changeup makes sense, but the slider's way better.
Yeah.
Canning's actually is a surprisingly decent changeup, but again, breaking balls are better there. Yeah, it's interesting. I see like a mediocre.
Christopher Sanchez?
Sure.
Ronel Blanco.
Yeah, well, Blanco's changeup has been great, but the slider is really a big deal with that too. You know?
Yeah, but maybe Thorpe has a good enough. So, I mean, we're damning him with faint praise here. We're putting him somewhere between Ronel Blanco and Michael Wacha.
Sure.
And Nick Martinez.
Well, yeah. I mean, Nick Martinez probably is like, oh man, I hope. there are moments where like Nick Martinez's curve looks great and the cutter works and it all kind of comes together. But yeah, I mean, it's the thing about Drew Thorpe is it's kind of tough for us because obviously we're pulling us from one game. We can't really do that. And he's absolutely one of those guys that look, if you just spot things well, you have enough to make that work on a given night. I mean, he survived yesterday, to be fair, right? And being a changeup first guy, you have to be a command guy. There's just really no way around that. It's not like you throw down the middle, you're Matt Brash and whatever, I'm just going to do this.
Right.
Like, no, you have to be working properly and going in and out, up, down with all this stuff. And that very, as long as you have one thing that's like, no, haha, got you, that's my guy, then you can get through with that.
One thing that was interesting, though, was that Cal Raleigh anticipated a changeup and mm-hmm. smoked it down the line for a double.
Yeah.
And I think that is actually one of the key problems with the changeup is anticipation.
Sure.
I mean, there's some changeup guys
still so good.
They don't turn whiffs into strikeouts the same way.
Right.
And even in Double A this year with the White Sox, you saw how good Thorpe was, but he had a 14.8% swing strike rate and a 25% strikeout rate. That's not a normal correlation there.
I mean, yeah, definitely.
So back of the napkin, a lot of times you can like double the swing strike rate.
Yeah, that's the two times. Sometimes you get up to 2.5 if they get called strikes in there.
Usually that's a breaking ball guy with good called strikes.
Yeah, right. That's Brady Singer.
But then the changeup guys you'll get like 1.5 times.
And, yeah, you will. And, I'm thinking about like Trevor Hoffman, who just would throw it all the time. Yeah. And like they knew it was coming. I did see Webb actually go away from it because I think he had a game or two where guys were just like, we're only cheating on the changeup now.
And he also told me that, yeah, it's going in, it goes in and out a little bit.
Mm.
I think it's because it's a seam shift wake changeup, but the changeup for Webb is a little bit more horizontal and less vertical than it has been in the past. I don't know if that's maybe because he's throwing more sweepers.
Sure.
But he's so good and the changeup's so good that even if it's, you know, 80% or 90% of its true talent, mm-hmm. I've been thinking about this, that like pitches have true talent.
Yeah.
And then they kind of oscillate around that.
Well, it's like, we should be this, but it's like, sometimes good, sometimes right. And then like, yeah, what's the norm of it? What's the medium expectation of it? And some days there's like, and actually that is a transition, I think, to another guy I wanted to bring, actually a surprise guy. I'm going to talk about him after this break. So this is fun. Okay. One of my favorite things about, I know it just feels like I'm a shill for this thing, but I've just been addicted to this four seam fastballs thing. I get live data and just like, it's just another level of like, oh man, I get to report more on more things. Zach Wheeler is a guy that we know as being a low vert arm, but he gets by on velocity. So 95, 96, he gets by on extension over 7 feet. We know that. And his attack angle's always been good. It's never been like Joe Ryan 2.0 or something. It's been 1.4. Actually, I looked at his last 4 years, including this year, it's averaged 1.4 every year.
So okay, what happened his last start?
1.3, 1.5. What happened his last start? I don't know. I don't know, because I looked at it last night. I was like, okay, 1.9. What? I mean, I looked at this a little bit more. He is throwing down more in this game. He wasn't as up, and there might be something to be said about maybe like being lower. He then got down lower or something. I don't know, but what the heck? Like 1.9, I just never see from Zach Wheeler. That is super elite. Yusei Kikuchi is there at 1.8, by the way, and he threw it up in the zone yesterday, and it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. But 1.9 is like elite of the elites, and Zach Wheeler doesn't need that extra thing. I just need to mention that one to you, because like, dude, everyone needs to know this.
That's yeah. Awesome. And how awesome did Tyler Megill look in that stuff in that four seam fastball fan 4+?
Yeah, the location was 91.
Yeah. What I get a whiff of with him is I'm throwing as hard as I can. I'm in the big leagues.
Right.
and we've seen his velo like kind of vary drastically, but I'm a lot more excited about him at 95.9 than I have been in the past.
Oh yeah. And no, he was throwing harder this time. I mean, we've seen him at like 94 at times this year. So yeah,
he's getting close. He was one of the, like, nobody was really red in all four quadrants yesterday.
Yeah. Kikuchi was the closest, I think.
Yeah. And
Megill, but yeah, like he was roaring through. The problem, I mean, look, with Megill, what happened yesterday, cutters were pretty good. That was like a better version of his cutter. Mm-hmm. And he still can't look. If you actually are red in attack angle, HAVAA, then you can't be low, because low is actually benefiting flat, right?
Sort of coming back up.
Right. That's actually a flatter swing downstairs. Mm-hmm. That's where you want to be steep. So if you're getting flatter, then you can't be living in the middle or down. You got to be upstairs. So
I do think that they're like, for example, Thorpe, he needs to throw some low fastballs, because his changeup is so always steep. Down.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he needs to throw some low fastballs so that people are kind of like, ooh, I don't automatically know that low is
right. Well, this is what Gallen does. I call that the Gallen approach.
Yeah.
I got to figure out, I have the BSB. There needs to be something for Gallen. I'll figure that one out. but he does that with low four seamers, high called strike rate, 25% four seamers, and then he gets the absurd low lock on changeups and curveballs. Or it's all just living downstairs underneath it. 80% we're talking with massive O swings, because he just lives with call strikes down and they don't know which one it's going to be. It works out super well. And actually Gallen last year even talked about trying to do the BSB sometimes. Like, hey, I have some good vert on my four seams, like 16 inches or whatever. I'm trying to maybe explore a little bit. Didn't work. It just was bad. And then there's some games that just can't happen. It's like, yeah, no. Just stay low. You're much better there. And that's how Zach Gallen works. And I see that a lot with guys that don't have that flatness. And it's like, fine, you have good vert and it's flat. Like, then just live downstairs with called strikes. Or you have such amazing vert that doesn't matter and you're Justin Verlander and you throw upstairs anyway.
So did you watch that start, the Megill start?
I watched some of it. I didn't watch all of it.
Why did they take him out so early?
Oh, I don't know. I assume it has to do with whatever they want of like the third time to the lineup or all that stuff. I don't know why they did, but I did see some good cutters from him. It's just, I need him to do the Bailey Ober thing. He can be a better Bailey Ober. He just can't locate that thing.
That's, I guess, a little bit of a game situation. Mm-hmm. He allowed Jake Berger to reach on error. Jazz Chisholm scored, and they wanted to get, oh, and then a lefty came up. Jesus Sanchez came up.
Oh, I see. And they wanted to get something else in there.
So they brought in Danny Young, their lefty.
Ah, there you go. But yeah, I mean, Tyler McGill, I hope it works out with him. I think it just very much has to do with location for him overall and just like getting more consistency on that heater instead of just chucking as hard as he can, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah.
You're taking McGill over Thorpe this season, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Wins. Like, I will always take the guy where I can understand what the difference is, as opposed to Thorpe. Like, Thorpe is fine. It's, you know, he should be okay against bad teams, but he's not going to be someone that I feel excited to roster. But I mean, that's too much about on the fantasy side. There's also Cutter Crawford in there, still going 19 to 20 vert on his four seamer. I think had a pretty solid game against the Red Sox, an unearned run or two, actually. But he's a perfect example of like, just throw good vert fastballs upstairs and you'll be fine for the most part. And Kikuchi also, just you should check out that Kikuchi start if you haven't yet. He's finally throwing four seamers in the upper third, and I think it was 12 whiffs on about 60 thrown. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and four walks.
I know, because his changeup and slider, it drives me nuts. His slider is gone at the moment. And I do wonder, I actually have this thought about
that. Kikuchi was like how he stopped walking people, is he went to the slider and in counts where he needed a strike.
Right. And I wonder if Kikuchi's ability, like this, has gotten better overall, the four seamer this year. And his focus on trying to stay behind it and up and through instead of just kind of the scatter plot or shotgun blast of four seamers that we've seen in the past. I wonder if that has affected his ability to locate sliders somehow. And he's had to turn to this changeup that is not good for a bit. He had a better game against the Orioles with that slider, and then he went away from it again yesterday. While the curveball has always been that, cool, I need a strike, this is it, high CSW yesterday, but still he was wrestling that pitch the entire time, and he didn't feel as if he had a secondary outside of the four seamer he could really get in the zone and earn a strike with. So there's your four walks. But that foundation of a fastball now is better than ever. And it's so nice to see, like, oh, hey, your foundation is so good. Can you just like go to the grocery store and just get like the last two things you need now to make this lovely cake? You know, he's
one thing about Cutter that occurred to me was, you know, he's thrown his sweeper, 22% of the time. Last year was 7% of the time. So, you know, he's following the league trend in terms of throwing it more often. But last year he threw the sweeper to 82 miles an hour. This year it's 81. And so I did a little quick search on particularly sweepers under 82 miles an hour.
Okay.
And I wanted to do that year by year. And so in 2021, the WOBA on those types of sweepers was 272, and the whiff rate was 32%. This year, the WOBA is 282, and I think that's going to go up because let me do it month by month, actually. I should do that. Okay, I'm only doing first half of the season because offense peaks in August. So if you do first half of the season, year by year. So the here we go. Okay. 243 WOBA with a 34% whiff rate in 2021.
Uh-huh.
This year, 282 WOBA with a 29% whiff rate.
Oh.
So I tweeted about this a little bit, but basically sweepers, batters are performing better against sweepers as right. they go. And so I think that I'm not saying that that's still a good WOBA, especially for a pitch that's under 82 miles an hour. To get a 282 WOBA, it's a 220 batting average, 273 OBP, 369 slugging. That's still a pitch that performs better than you expect for an 80 mile an hour pitch.
Right, right.
But it's not the trendy pitch that it was. And if you're Cutter Crawford, you know, you run the risk of throwing a pitch that doesn't really look like the rest of your stuff. You're a four seam with ride, you know, gyro slider, split finger guy,
mm-hmm.
And then a knuckle curve that comes off of that. Like the sweeper is like the one thing that's like, oh, I'm going this way. Everything right, else right. is like this.
You're a yeah, so guy. It's pretty obvious when it's coming in that that's what it's going to be.
So yeah. Cutter has a 441 slugging, expected 467 slugging against the sweeper this year. He's even thrown 80 of them to lefties. And I'm just like, I know you want this shiny new toy type thing.
Yeah.
But I think I would reduce the amount of sweepers, especially to lefties, and increase the amount of splitters and knuckle curves to lefties. One thing that we've
seen it's interesting.
With Cutter is that he hasn't been as good recently. I got really pilloried by somebody for not putting him higher because he was the ERA leader at some point.
Oh, yeah, but these aren't ERA rankings, guys.
And I'm also just like, ERA is not predictive. So he had a 135 ERA in March and April, a 514 in May, and a 450 in June.
Yeah, I will mention the schedule has been pretty rough. Brewers,
Orioles, that's part of why ERA is not predicted.
Yeah, right. And on the topic of the sweeper, he's actually had some success this year against lefties. Ideal contact rate for the sweeper against lefties this year is about 39%, which isn't that great for a breaking ball. You generally want to see 35% or lower for it to be like, yeah, great. But above 40% is where you say, there actually is some problems here. I mean, actually, overall for the year, the pitch that gets crushed for Cutter Crawford is his four seamer. That's a 50% ICR, actually 51 on the season, which is really shocking because here we are talking about, oh my gosh, the vert on this.
He's not using it too much. I mean, he's a Boston Red Sox. He's using it 34% of the time.
Right. And to me, I mean, the main thing with Cutter is, first of all, is if you don't know, he's the one guy on pitcher list that has his own Easter egg on his player page. But he doesn't really have that leader, right? That's why I've said it with Cutter Crawford. I mean, maybe it is the cutter itself that is truly the great pitch. I mean, it's a 30% ICR this year, high strike rates, but it's not that, hey, do something with this, I got you pitch. Like, it's a 13% swing strike rate.
There's a fair amount of middle for his four seamer.
Right. It's a pitch that I think is as good as it is because people want to hit the four seamer, not because this is just in its own vacuum that unreal of a pitch.
If he didn't have the four seamer at all, would the cutter be as good? Yeah.
Right. And without it sharing the same name as him. So
I like how the Red Sox in particular are like, we don't give a crap about this idea that sweepers should only be thrown by certain arm slots.
Right. You were talking about
way over the top guys throwing sweepers.
Right. Well, I mean, what's interesting is last year, I think in the second half, Nick Pivetta talked about his sweeper as the whirly bird. And it was kind of a thing that went through the camp like the flu, where everyone just started to feel like, hey, let's just kind of throw sweepers and some cutters and see what happens. And it was working. And they didn't really care about anything else. Just like, here's a grip and rip it and throw it like this, see what happens. And it's worked for them. I think you're totally right that he doesn't have like a traditional amazing slider in Cutter Crawford. So it's this four seamer that has good vert, but can still get hit pretty hard because he does not have good extension from what I remember. Yeah, 6.1. It's
It's easy to sort of keyhole him velocity wise.
Oh, sure. Yeah, 93 on that fastball, 88 on the cutter, 81.
So you're like, I'm looking to hit at 88 to 93. Anything that's below that, I'm just going to probably spin
just not. Yeah, sure.
Or I'm going to identify it early.
Right. Right. I mean, the splitter is interesting. It's at 82. And sometimes we see splitters be closer to the fastball. That's a 10-mile-per-hour difference.
I think a harder splitter would be better for him.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that one. It is a heavy swing strike rate at 25% and 63% overall strike rate, but
nobody's game planning for it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. This is a rare pitch for him. It's a surprise. Good on him, at least. Like, it is a rarely thrown pitch. And so good on him to actually execute it enough to get that high strike rate, because that can be a hard part too, is if you don't throw a pitch enough, like, it's not going to be as polished as the others, especially when you just randomly call upon it inside of a game.
I think this idea that, you know, there's a novelty effect, we just referenced in two different ways, by the way,
yeah,
on one pitcher.
Yeah.
That the split finger works for him because they don't see it very often.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sweeper is not working for him because they're starting to see sweepers everywhere in the league. And we've seen that, you know, work against batters are performing better against the sweeper, not only at low, below 82, just at all levels.
Right.
And so the thing about that, I think it has a lot of implications for pitch design, for what we do in terms of pitch analysis, stuff plus, like all of these things. There was a time where I was hoping to create a metric that would just stand the test of time and just sit there and just and leave it alone. And, it, and it's predictive and it's great, but it's just not going to be that way for stuff. Stuff Plus is going to be a little bit more like XWOBA, where it needs updates every year because of this novelty effect. And we need to figure out how to really nail down what the novelty effect is. And it, then it has implications for the whole idea of coaching a pitcher and saying, you should throw your best pitches only all the time.
Right, right. Yeah, because if it's novelty, then all of a sudden that will be good, right?
That that goes, then you start throwing, you know, if you only throw your best pitches all the time, you don't get any of the novelty effect, and they start to see your shapes. That's the Graham Ashcraft problem, is that by the fourth inning, they're like, yo, I have seen everything you've got, and I know it's nasty, but I can tell when the cutter's coming versus when the sweeper's coming. So, you know, you're dead in the water. I mean, like I'm ready to go. Like people are probably happy to walk out, like surprisingly happy to walk out to face a 97 mile an hour dude with a bat breaking cutter and a, like a 88 mile an hour sweeper. They're still happy to walk out there. Yeah. Like, I know what you got. I've seen it. I know which one it's going to be.
Well, it's funny. Cause like 97 means different these days, right? Because like the league average now is, we were expecting like 94. You were saying the threshold of what matters. It used to be 94 to 95.
Yeah, now it's like 96,
the jumps. Now it's 96, right?
Yeah. So he's closer to that. So sometimes the cutter drops below 96, and then you're like, oh,
yeah, there you go. We get this. We know how much to adjust our bat now when we see this like a fastball. Yeah, it's so going back to just cutter and putting a pin on that one, I see a guy that's, it's an old gestalt theory, like the sum of the parts kind of should work better than individually, right? As we're mentioning with the four seamer, that the cutter is what makes that one work. Kind of like Kodai Senga's a bit. I don't really love Kodai Senga's cutter from in a vacuum, but because of the four seamer being this erratic pitch that is
coming in hard, good shape,
right,
and
right,
and good velo,
yeah,
poor locations,
and because of that, the cutter can just kind of be in there, and they go, "Oh man, this is the cutter! Oh my gosh!"
All right. Yeah,
and that's a really really tough game to play.
The last thing, that's interesting, you know, in this conversation is the value of multiple fastballs.
I'm
talking to Mitch Haniger, and he said, if I put my four seam swing on a pitch and get a two seam, that's not good.
Yeah, right.
And what I just saw in my head of somebody taking a four seam swing at Kodai Senga's cutter, they're going to top that thing.
Right.
It's a grounder. It's a probably straight into the ground. It's
maybe off the barrel of the bat. Sorry, the end of the bat. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a foul. And so what we've seen, and I'm stealing from myself here. So please still read the piece when it comes out with Jason Stark this week. But the number of pitchers with two fastballs has risen 33% by a third since 3 years ago, and the number with three fastballs has gone up 40%.
So that's including a cutter then as the third.
Yes, I have cutters, two seamers, and four seamers. So multiple fastballs is definitely a thing. That's why I was thinking to myself during the Drew Thorpe start, you know, is the cutter, and that's another thing. Cutters are not always fastballs.
Yeah.
And I think Drew Thorpe's cutter is not a fastball.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. That is more of a slider.
That's more of a slider. And so I think, you know, in future versions of Stuff Plus, for example, we're going to do something where a cutter is a fastball if it's within like 3 miles an hour of the four seam or the two seam. And a cutter is a breaking ball if it's outside of that range.
Oh man. I will never forget your tweet. That's like, don't get me started about the difference between.
Oh my God. It's I still years yeah. later.
We don't know.
It's angry. I might, it's one of my idea pieces. Like, that's just like, you know, should I write about our cutters, fastballs or sliders?
I mean, it's, you just show the whole spectrum of it, but at some point you got to draw a line, you know? And the thing problem is they have to draw two of them. I'm like, what? I don't want to do that. I just want to do one.
Yeah. Right. But, so but if you, do have like three fastballs, you know, I think it almost makes the nature of each individual quality of each individual fastball a little bit less relevant.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, we see this with the Mariners. Like a lot of them added sinkers. And by the way, I'm waiting for the three pitches to be four seamer, two seamer, and sinker. Because believe it or not, I did that and it was fun.
Separating sinkers and two seamers?
Yes. There were times where I emphasized run and sometimes I want to emphasize sink.
So that's the difference for you between a two seamer and a sinker is vertical movement.
Vertical movement
are one plane.
What I would do, I would actually
sort of this way.
I would actually try to at times against lefties as a righty, emphasize with my index finger getting on top and getting more of that spin of the kind of like the pseudo spin.
So it's that just make it sideways and not going.
So I'm trying to make a gyro cutter from the left side as a righty is what I would try and do. And then I would do to righty. Wait, I would do.
Am I right? So you would only get two seam movement and not sinker movement.
Where is my baseball?
You would throw a sinker.
Where is my super suit? Right. What I would do though is So against a righty, I would try and get horizontal movement inside, and that's how I would get the handle of the bat, and that's how I would get my ground balls.
Uh-huh.
But then against the lefties, I would have less faith of this because they would just tuck out the bat more, which then would fall more, which then would get more lift on it. So I would want to try to get underneath the bat. I would try and go down and away as much as I could instead middle away.
Oh, so you want more sinkerish.
I want more sink on against lefties. So what I would do is I would try to extend more and try and take that two-seamer grip that I had, but then really emphasize on this on the pinky more, or not the pinky, sorry, the index finger more, and get essentially the reverse cutter spin. So instead of coming off supinating, I would ultra pronate down and essentially get that tumbling action that way. And I don't know how great I was at it, but I noticed that there was a difference, actually separation between the two of them as much as I could. And I would just sometimes in at bats, if I saw that they were like on this one, I would just adjust it slightly, you know.
How old were you when you started to have feel like that?
That was, I would say end of high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
It takes a while, right?
Yeah. I mean, I also didn't know. Like my education for pitching is weird. And I'm so upset about it.
Did it take machines at some point to show you what your
machines?
Movement patterns
you think
were?
I got machines?
No, I didn't think.
Oh my gosh. I don't have video of myself, Eno. Okay.
I've been taking slow motion video
in 2006.
I've been taking slow motion video of my 12-year-old.
My iPhone came out in 2007.
we're trying to do is get that forcing movement.
Right.
It's actually surprisingly hard with a little kid.
Yeah. No, I'm not surprised at all.
And
I've
told him cues like, you know, like really like focus on your fingers, rip the seams, like rip down, like viper, like just really
the pulling down the cord of the
like pull it. But what I noticed was his hands are still so small that like like other things touch it.
Yeah.
And it just starts squirreling around.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking the next throwing session, which is today, I'm thinking of maybe telling him the Max Scherzer
thumb tuck.
Thumb tuck.
Yeah, sure. If you guys are,
I have no idea what will happen. I feel like the ball will go flying, but
it's going to pop out of his hand. But the thumb tuck, essentially I think most people do is the right side of your thumb. If you're righty, as a line essentially underneath the ball. But the thumb tuck, what Eno is describing, is actually making it, instead of straight, you're making a 90 degree angle instead.
So you're kind of jamming against the side of your thumb instead of using the pad of your thumb.
Right.
You're kind of jamming it into the side of your thumb.
Yeah. Right. I would always,
I think the idea of the thumb tuck is if you have your pad on it on the side, then you're touching the ball on the side, right?
Yeah,
if you put your pad on it, like their thumb pad, you're touching the side, and so you might give it side spin.
That's so interesting. I've ever done grips, it's always been the side of my thumb. It's never been the pad of my thumb.
You've never put the pad of your thumb on the ball.
No, and I would actually think that would be for a cutter or a or something like that. Or no, not a cutter. I would just that would be like that's if a you're trying to maybe. To yeah, I guess a change up. I would. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it so much more comfortable actually the side of my thumb for everything.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I people have talked about a lot saying like thumb placement is the most important, and I'm like, oh yeah, you're probably right.
So apparently, Alex Vesia was teammates with Max Scherzer.
Sure.
Minor league?
Maybe.
Was Alex Vesia a minor leaguer with the Mets?
Scherzer was with the Diamondbacks, though, wasn't he?
Where's Alex Vesia?
Or maybe like in rehab or something?
I mean, I think Alex Vesia is a Dodger, but...
Well, I mean, Scherzer was too for a sec.
Maybe it's when Scherzer was a Dodger. Oh, he was in Miami? Okay, so Alex Vesia has been with the Dodgers since 21. I think Scherzer was a Dodger in there somewhere. Anyway, they were telling a story on a cast I was watching that Vesia learned the thumb talk from Scherzer, I think. Mm. And that's how he started to really get on the ball.
That's amazing. But bringing this all together here, one, I would tell your son to do the towel drill. That's the best one for getting out as much as you can. If you don't know the towel drill, you just take a dish rag and you pitch, and without a ball, you just do your whole windup.
You try to hit something.
Whip it out.
I think part of it is like you try to hit something.
Yeah. Like, I mean, really, you can just do it without even hitting anything. You just try and whip it as far forward as you can.
Mm.
That's it. And that what that teaches you is about extension. It teaches you about just kind of the feel of coming straight down. And you can't whip it really if you're going to the side more, right? You have to be going straight down with it.
Oh, for spin axis.
Yep. And that also will help with getting behind the four seamer, that kind of stuff, to get that backspin on it. Keeping that straight as much as you can. It's what I did a bit. It's absolutely helpful.
And because of Alex Fast, I have my kids doing the little finger the strength.
For the guitar and everything. I have one of those. That's great. That's good too.
I was like, do that, because one kid's playing guitar and they're both playing baseball. So I'm like,
oh, that's great. You should play bass though, because remember Alex Fast bass camp for starting pitchers was the wedding gift I gave him. Of his shirt I wore at his wedding, because of course they would get all these blisters, and he's like, just make them learn the bass, get all the calluses they need. But yeah, definitely do the towel drill. And the second thing, I really wish we got back to two seamer sinker being separated, but honestly, it's just kind of cleaner for all of our data.
Yeah.
But it is, I think there really is something about doing pure ride inside. I always think of ride as horizontal. I know that I'm the weird one now. Rises up, right, is horizontal, and then also actually having a true sinker. I think there is a separation between those two, but it's fine. It's easier just to say one word in sinker. We have other guys to talk about. There's one, obviously, Hurston Waldrop, but we have to. We're going to talk about him and others, of course, as we do after this break. All right, Hurston Waldrop. We obviously watched this one. Preseason for me, I called him a reliever. And then, of course, he goes and has a AAA start of 11 strikeouts and 6 innings and gets a quick call up then to Atlanta. And it was okay. It was efficient. I'm not even talking about like what the models say of the quality. Just, hey, look, he got through 3 innings, got an out in the fourth. And then it all just kind of went bad. Lots of walks in this one. There was a home run to Keber Ruiz. That was a bad fastball. Obviously, like, this could have gone differently. For Waldrop, and you can't really read into an MLB debut, but we have data. And what did you see in Hurston Waldrop's data from his MLB debut?
It wasn't good.
No.
No, it wasn't good. What was the comp that I dropped on him when we were
talking? Oh, no. Oh, gosh. I'm going to let you say it and laugh, okay?
No, I forgot it.
Oh, dang it, because I did too. That was my way of... I know. It's he's a worse Keaton Wynn.
Keaton Wynn, right, because...
And you were so ashamed. Eno was like, oh, no!
Well, because 95, they both throw 95.
Yeah.
They both throw four-seam. I did see one or two sinkers from Waldrop, and Keaton Wynn does that too. They both throw a lot of splitters. In fact, almost 50-50 splitters. the Stuff Plus model likes Keaton Wynn's splitter light better. It likes his forcing better. It likes everything better, basically. You know, even if I'm willing to maybe give Waldrip a pass on the splitter in terms of like maybe it is okay Stuff Plus wise and maybe it's just one start. Mm-hmm. I think the four seam quality is so poor that I'm not sure it's going to work. Like it takes a lot to be like a 50-50. Like you've even seen the ups and downs of Keaton Wynn. That's why I wanted to bring that name up. It's like, yep. If you've got a guy who's kind of 50-50 fast, like, or 30-30 fastball slider splitter, it puts a lot of pressure on their fastball command and their splitter command. And we know what Nick Pollock thinks about splitter command.
What are you talking about? Oh, man. Yeah.
See it when you believe it, right? Or believe it when you see it.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, okay. I will say this about Waldrep. I do think ultimately his splitter is better than Keaton Wynn's. Well, Keaton Wynn, like, they're different. Wins is more of like, hey, look, I can just throw a strike for this, and that's cool. I mean, yes, he did get 10 whiffs on the splitter in the last weekend, but I really don't think it's this massive swing strike pitch. I think it's just more of like, look, it's almost like fork balls in the zone a little bit to me. And less of like dominating splitter. And Waldrep is more like, no. Classic, like Clemens splitter feel to it. And that there is something more to it in that respect of you need to fear the splitter as opposed to Wynn's is like, hey, yo, this is what I do. Jose Contreras, you know, hey, what's up? So there's a little bit of a difference there. However, Wynn has, I think, more kind of going for him on the other things. Like he's able to navigate a little bit more with that splitter. And because of that, it allows him to kind of keep a floor more stable. While with a Waldrep, as you were mentioning, like the eye test looks good. It just looks like, oh, cool. It's like, there's a fastball. It's at 96. Yeah, everything's great. But man, we were looking at the underlying numbers. It's just not a good shape in the slightest.
Yeah. I mean, Keaton Wynn's four seam has the same vertical movement. Mm-hmm. Actually, he's a dead ringer for Keaton Wynn.
Yeah, really? Completely.
Like across the board. I'm like really amazing. Surprised.
Where was the Keaton Wynn hype, guys?
Dude, this is where crazy. Was it? So Keaton Wynn's extension on the four seamer 6.2, Hurst and Waldrep 6.5. I mean, mm-hmm. there is a difference there, but we're not talking about super meaningful. I mean, like good extension is over 7, right?
So, yeah, right. So it's like them. When you get underneath 6.5, it's like, okay, yeah. You're starting to hurt yourself.
It's bad or worse, you know?
Right.
In terms of vertical release height, 6.3 for both of them.
Wow.
Horizontal movement, 1.4 for both of them. Vertical movement 15.2 for both of them.
Wow, really? Identical. Yeah. Incredible.
Actually, Keaton Wynn's horizontal movement is more than Hurst and Waldrep's, but their HAVAA is both exactly the same.
Wow, 0.6 or whatever stand. It is. It's it's bad.
95.6 for Keaton Wynn, 95.7 for Hurst and Waldrep. 2300 RPM for Keaton Wynn, 2200 for Waldrep. 1 o'clock spin axis for Hurst and Waldrep, 130 for Keaton Wynn. So it's like, I mean, their fastballs are identical. Keaton Wynn's splitter, I think I might disagree with you. Keaton Wynn's splitter is 89. Hurst and Waldrep's is 86.
Oh, Keaton really? Wynn's
splitter has more drop and more horizontal movement.
Yeah, I might be wrong on this. I thought that I could have sworn that Hurston's was harder and that Wynn's was slower. I whiffed on that.
Keaton Wynn's sinker is better. Keaton Wynn's slider is 88. Hurst and Waldrep's slider is 87.
This is unbelievable.
Dude, their sliders, his Keaton Wynn's slider, 1 IVB, 1.2 horizontal. Hurst and Waldrep's slider, 2.2 IVB, 1 horizontal. They are the same person.
So who do you, so let's take a step back here. Who has better command?
Have you watched Keaton Wynn?
Yeah.
There's something about his landing foot I do not like.
Really?
I think he's like, I think he's squeezing his butt muscle a lot. He like lands. there's like a twitch. He lands and then his foot moves. Like, I think he lands and then squeezes his butt muscle. So there's like this weird, it's like this, it's something about his delivery I really don't like. I didn't notice it until I was in person. But there's something about his blocking foot that I don't like.
This is actually a question that I don't ask enough. And I realize that I might do it weird, but where, okay, when you're watching a game, right, just on TV, where are your eyes?
Oh, the ball, the release point.
I always never, the ball. So
you never look at their legs. I never look at their landing spot. But it took me being at the game to be like, what are you doing with your landing leg?
Right. So there's two things that I do generally. One, I take a few pitches and I don't look at the locations, nothing. I just look at the entirety of the delivery alone. And I don't look at the ball at all. But when I'm actually watching a game like properly, I only look at the catcher's glove. I get to see out of the corner of my eye all the mechanics, all the stuff. Like I can still make that.
When you're at the game? No,
watching on TV after I've like inspected their mechanics a couple pitches or so.
You watch the catcher's glove?
I just watch the catcher's glove and just keep
you don't watch the movement of the pitch?
That I can see the movement of the pitch
because you're watching the catcher's glove.
Because I'm watching the catcher's glove. Like I can actually like on the corner of my eye, I still see it. Like the idea of our eyes in motion following it isn't good enough to me. And also like you can also your eyes assume
where you're trying to almost like reverse pick it up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like what a hitter might do is like the hitter is looking at the hand, the release point and trying to pick it up, you know,
I'm just tracking
the pitch all the way in like, oh, right. Look at that movement profile.
So I'm just like, I'm essentially my eyes are on the glove and like, I can see the ball enter the view and everything like that. It's actually, and it makes it a lot easier for me because I have a consistent like spot. You know, I'm not moving with my eyes, which then might, mess it up. But I realize this, like, this is not normal. Like, most people are looking at the pitcher. And then once they start the motion,
I'm looking at the release point, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always, because release point is so important in stuff plus, I'm hyper-focused on release point. So,
one of the first things
I'm always asking is what is this? Is this 3/4? Is it 2/3? Is it lower? Is it higher?
Well, right. I mean, you can still get that. Like during delivery, I'm just doing it right now.
If you're looking at the delivery portion, you're getting that. Yeah.
I'm watching the delivery. And then the second he's about to release, I go straight to the glove before the ball gets there.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm watching him now. Two, I'm taking Keaton Wynn. Keaton Wynn had lower walk rates.
Yeah.
Has a better park.
Yeah.
Has better situation. Neither one of these guys I'm starting against the Dodgers.
Oh, gosh, no.
I think both these guys are like 50% starters. And for me, Keaton Wynn is very obvious what the 50% is, and it's home. And if there's a choice between 50% home and 50% away, I'm always going to take the 50% home because people are better when they're home. Just that's sort of a general thing.
Yeah. I mean, one of my proudest moments, by the way, guys, is doing a panel with Derek Carty about streaming pitchers. I'm like, what? This guy's like got all the data. I'm just like gut feel. And during it, someone asked a question about like home away. And I said, you know, I'm probably going to disagree with Carty here, but I think that home road splits are just like random grouping. You take two things and you just put them in two buckets and you're going to have different numbers. And that's just kind of how it is. And then Carty looks at me and goes, yeah, home road splits are dumb. And I go, what? Can you put that out on Twitter right now? And he literally did it during the panel. He put out a tweet, and I think it's in 2021. You go see that Derek Carty says home road splits are dumb. And it's during football season, everyone's like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? The home field. He's like, oh my God.
was that partially because like, you know, pitchers change teams and then.
Well, it's okay. So park factors are not dumb.
Okay.
But generically just saying, oh, he's good on the road or he's.
Oh, right. Right. Home. But like Keaton Wynn has a reason to be good at home too.
Well, right. Because that's the whole thing I was going to get at was like, I understand the park factor is good, but you can also say, cool, if they're on the road, the park factor is fine.
Right.
Be good too.
So I mean, I think Keaton Wynn might be closer to a 60%, 70% starter, you know, for me, maybe in 15 team leagues.
Sure.
12 team leagues, he's probably like a 40% starter, whereas Waldrip is like maybe 30, 50.
So I mean, going back to Waldrip here, and by the way, I do agree with you. I think generally Keaton Wynn is kind of better and is a better command guy than I think Waldrip is. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just say that Waldrip is just donezo because MLB debut, I don't really know totally if the command is going to be what it is. What I saw before this and why I thought he was a reliever was because I thought, yeah, he is kind of wild in his release as well as his delivery doesn't really speak to me as consistent and precise. There was some hype, I remember, from the draft of his slider. And it's not clearly that amazing pitch right now.
For Waldrop.
For Waldrop, correct. And there was more hype, I think, about the splitter with Waldrop. I mean, even watching it, I still felt as if like this had like a nastier bite in a... I mean, maybe at 86, that's why. But when I think of Keaton Wins, like, I don't really think of this like 20-25% swing strike rate pitch. I think of it as a more of just getting in the zone. And
I'm surprised Keaton Wins is 89. Like,
right, me too.
That's not how I perceive it either. But
right. And what's kind of nuts is of watching him now, because he made me watch his mechanics, I get a mix of like Clayton Richards, who is the most annoying thing in the world when it comes to delivery. I think Kyle Hendricks a little bit with the way he releases it in this kind of like matter of fact way. And those are the guys I think of first when I see Keaton Wins delivery.
There's something, the blocking legs kind of hard to see from the angles we usually get.
Yeah.
Because it's literally how his front leg lands, and then the like there's like a twitch in it.
Right.
You know, like there's something like it's not solid.
Yeah, let me see one more time. Let me
have you ever seen someone like over there?
Oh, I see what you're talking about. So right, he's laying with his foot, and then as the power goes through it, it doesn't stay
firm. Twitches or whatever. It's not,
it doesn't stay firm. It's like it's getting there, you know, it's that extra bit as he turns it over. It's probably because he's so slow in the beginning, and then all of a sudden
pushes forward,
kind of like Hendricks does. And by the way, very quickly, back in like 2019, I think it was, my sister came into town with my brother-in-law and my like 2-year-old nephew. And like, we want Liam to go to a baseball game. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get the best tickets. Okay, only in town. Fine. I guess it'll be Mets, whatever, not the Yankees. Mm-hmm. Fine. I'll get you guys field level seats. I'll get this thing. I want you guys to experience baseball, right? Can't wait to see who's going to pitch. It was Clayton Richards. Okay. Which, by the way, I mean, Clayton, I'm so proud of you for getting that career out of what you got. those mechanics are like literally like my least favorite pitching mechanics I've ever seen in my life. I would say his extension is like 4.5. it is so painful. And then the other one on the Mets was someone who I called the false king. That is Corey Oswalt. And not Roy Oswalt.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, this is the game I got for them. And I couldn't believe it. So
ERA somewhere around 5 combined.
Oh my gosh. Props to Clayton Richards. I used to say he's the wrong Clayton when I did the roundup for him.
You didn't see a lot of strikeouts that day from there.
No, I didn't. I did see a 2-run shot, I think, from Austin Hedges, though.
Oh, that's when you know you're seeing good pitching.
Yeah, there it is. Oh man, but yeah, Keaton Win, Harrison Waldrop. I think that's an unbelievable comp now that you've brought up all that stuff with Waldrop. I honestly am more interested in Schwellenbach. I don't know if we talked about him last week at all,
the fastball's better. Have you seen that there's been some real troubles against lefties? Which,
well, right, it's
could make sense.
I think the cutter cutter is actually, I think, really good. He messed one up against Joey Gallo, and Joey Gallo had a home run on often. If you throw a pitch to Joey Gallo that he hits for a home run, you know it was a bad one. But I actually do think that is a really good cutter in time for Schwellenbach to lefties. But it's 4-seamer at 96, which isn't the greatest shape ever, but it's solid.
But it's interesting because of release, because he releases it a foot lower than Hurston Waldrop. And he only gets... a foot lower.
Oh man. So what is the HAVA on that then?
Plus, it's plus. It's good.
It's plus.
I know. Good. I speak I like Chamberlain
plus.
Sometimes.
I like plus. Plus is good.
I don't know what yours. I would guess yours says.
Yeah, like I'm pulling it up now.
I'm guessing 1.2.
1.2. That sounds about right for Schwellenbach. I remember thinking like nothing was truly elite on Schwellenbach's on fastball, but like, hey, look, this should be fine.
He has almost similar movement vertically to Waldrop.
1.4. So that's actually much better than I expected. And a 6.8 extension, too. This is actually kind of the Wheeler 96.
It is.
In year 7, 1.4.
It's a drop and drive. It's like it's not bad. And then the slider, 86, with more movement than Waldrop's.
Yep.
But what does he do against lefties? You were talking about the cutter. Tell me about the cutter.
Well, I mean, the cutter to me is I mean, it's too high of a strike pitch right now. So how he's thrown it, he's thrown some really bad mistakes over the plate. Mm. That's really just been the detrimental aspect for him. But it is his main approach really is four seamer cutter with some curves. I think it should be more cutter, honestly, 26% usage thus far. He's not getting it as inside as I'd want at times. Some of these are just beautiful along the edge, not too far in. Like, this is exactly what you want a 92 mile per hour cutter to do. But the ones that end in the middle of the plate, well, okay, those are the ones I got hit a little bit hard. I think that is the area where Schmallenbach can kind of soar. The curveball he's tried to get over there is just not very good, which means that guys are now being pinned on 92 and 96, the fastball and the cutter, and also the fastball has not been commanded well at all there. So that's really the main thing is, okay, get that cutter inside more and find something slower that you like, either slider, curve, or changeup that can also really get strikes. And that might be the little bit of the process for Schmallenbach. But also he's gotten a really, I don't know, he's got get the Orioles now, which is like, what? I don't want to do that.
Right.
And hopefully he sticks around past Waldrip as Atlanta's trying to find their fifth starter to replace Strider. I think it's Schmallenbach more so than Waldrip, personally.
Yeah, I don't... I think... Does AJ Smith-Shawver just need to get healthy?
Maybe.
I mean, he's the guy with the best extension in the group.
He's got a really good fastball. I love it.
Best IVB in the group.
Yeah.
What is this? His secondary is that curveball and change. Am I not seeing a slider here for Shawver?
He did last year, but not anymore.
So he's last year there was a slider change.
Yeah, that's what we saw this year.
That's a little weird because it's 77 on the curve and 86 on the change.
You know who that reminds me of? It's I miss this kind of the three distinct velocity bands. That was Johan Santana's whole thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, three distinct velocity bands. It was fastballs, changeup, curve.
It's hard for me to bet. Actually, I'm going to say this. I'm going to pass on the bunch.
In all of them.
I mean,
get somebody,
dude, you're telling me I have a choice between a guy who, like, who has the best command, demonstrated command of any of these guys?
Maybe I think, honestly, Schmallenbach has it mostly. Okay. Like, I think he's the closest to it.
But then, so there's an iffy command on Waldrip, I think, in the minors, as you can see.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And then Smith-Shawver doesn't have a slider.
Yeah.
Like, this is a slider league, dude. I think slider's the cost of entry almost.
Yeah, he had a 41% strike rate on that slider last year across 24% usage. It wasn't like so far out of the zone. It wasn't complete shotgun blast, but he was just tugging it too far down in glove side last season. I think he just axed it this year, Smith-Shawver.
Listen, I have so much respect for Mike Fast, who...
Alex's uncle, yes.
Is he actually?
No, gosh. No.
That was part of the architects in Houston. And I'm sure, you know, they have a better stuff plus and they have, you know, gobs of data and they're doing good stuff. But all these guys are just, there's something weird about them. Like, yeah.
I think they know this, and what they're doing is they're just throwing what sticks, you know, throwing everything to the wall and seeing what sticks. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't really seen a team do this where it's just a revolving door of, all right, come on. One of you guys, please. We need
Elder Vines.
Darius Vines. Darius Vines. And also the fact that you have a six man right now with Schmallenbach and Walter being like, all right, duke it out. You know, like you're the Joker with one pool stick in Dark
One
Knight.
Will remain.
Yeah. So that's kind of what's happening until the deadline hits. And you got to also remember, Atlanta's in a really weird situation because you have Max Fried with a forearm strain in last year. You have Chris Sale, who's not really the greatest example of health. Renato Lopez, who has not been fully stretched out to be a starter before. And you have these two other guys now in this rotation too. And of course, Charlie Morton. So they know that they need to have more depth than they have now.
Would you package some of these guys?
Oh, yeah, probably.
like for Garrett Crochet?
Yeah,
who's
probably
worth it.
Who I mean, Crochet is the one on the market right now. I don't think Luzardo is personally.
What if they put Verlander on the market?
Oh man, I didn't think about that.
The Reds aren't trading their starters.
No.
Would the Cardinals put Sonny Gray on the market just a year after signing him?
No, that's just not the Cardinals thing.
The Tigers are going to put one of their starters on the market? They don't Flaherty, want starters yeah. back.
They would deal Flaherty. Well, I mean, they would want prospects. Oh,
they would deal Flaherty in a second. Actually, that might be a decent one. You'd give up one of these arms for Flaherty.
Yeah. Which one would you give up?
Waldrop.
Yeah, easily. Not a question. Definitely Waldrop. Get out of here.
Yeah. I want to keep my good fastballs. I like to start with a good fastball and then we can build off of that.
Yeah, right. That's always what it is. All right, guys. I think that's going to seal it for this week's episode of The Craft. Eno, so you got this article coming out with Jason Stark. What else you got?
Yeah, some big stuff in the hopper that you'll see soon, but it's tough. You know, when you've got the big projects, you kind of want to do that thing where you just don't want to do the work. It's what's called procrastinating.
Yeah. You just got to pace in the kitchen like I do. And, you know, actually, I'll be completely honest with you. I'm so excited for to be able to transcribe my notes on my phone. Like just take vocal notes and then like get transcribed and then rewritten for myself and then be like, that's pretty good.
The new iPhone update has a record exactly. this call.
That's what I'm, oh my, you know, record my notes, like actually make my notes from the voice memos and like, oh man, I cannot wait to do that, honestly. And then actually I'll do good writing after, but a lot of things are just like for projects, just got to write it down. Not actually my writing. Excited for all of that. We obviously at Pitcherless are developing all this stuff, working on a mobile app and our pro dashboard, which we cannot wait to show you guys. Hopefully we have a beta for both this winter. So be on the lookout for that. But that's what I'm spending all my days doing. And that's going to do it for this week's episode of The Craft. Oh, what a wonderful guest you are. You know, thank you so much for being here. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll again talk about the craft of pitching next week.